namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So we were discussing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, the items of regulative devotional service. And we came to the discussion of karma, jnana, and vairagya. And Rupa Goswami has stated that karma, meaning varnashram dharma, is not considered a qualification or an item of devotional service, and neither are jnana and vairagya. But if the devotee is not supposed to cultivate renunciation as part of devotional service, then what will be the devotee's relationship to material objects? Will he try to enjoy them like karmis? No, of course not. He should not try to enjoy them. Enjoy material things like karmis, nor should he try to renounce material things like jnanis. So how should he see material things or deal with material things? Yes. He should see the material energy as Krishna's energy and Krishna's property, which is meant for Krishna's use and Krishna's pleasure. And he can use them for the service of Krishna, as Krishna wants. Just like a servant in the house of a master can use everything in the house, but not for himself, only for the service of the master. He can take 100,000 rupees of the master's money to the bank to deposit in the master's account, and there will be no problem at all. But if he takes even 1 rupee for his own sense gratification, then he becomes implicated in stealing, and he becomes punishable. So we can deal with anything seeing it as the property of Krishna and using it for the satisfaction of Krishna without attachment. Rupa Goswami says, anasaktasya vishayan, that one should have no attachment for material objects, but seeing their relationship to Krishna, he can use them in Krishna's service. This is Yukta Vairagya. And Phalgu Vairagya is the Vairagya of the Jnanis. They are afraid to deal with material objects because they fear becoming entangled or becoming attached. So they renounce them in the sense that they don't touch them. But such renunciation is Phalgu Vairagya. Phalgu is one river in Bihar, which looks like dry sand, but under the surface of the sand is a river. So, Srila Prabhupada says that the Mayavadis appear to be very renounced, but actually they're not renounced. Under the surface, they have so many desires because their hearts are not pure. Avishuddha Buddhaya. Because they neglect the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, they have impure intelligence. So we have to avoid trying to enjoy material objects like karmis and falsely renouncing material objects like jnanis. If some object has some utility in Krishna's service, we should accept it. But if it has no utility in Krishna's service, we should reject it. This is surrender. We accept whatever is favorable and reject whatever is not favorable. Lord Krishna gives the example of the tortoise in Bhagavad Gita. If there's need, he can extend his senses, like the tortoise extends his limbs. And if there's no need for service, then he can withdraw his senses within and remember his master within. So it is a fine line between false enjoyment and false renunciation. But Yukta Vairagya is bhakti. The others are not. They cover bhakti. Jnana, karma, adi, anavritam. They come in adi. Phalgu Vairagya covers bhakti. And as we mentioned, the nature of bhakti is soft. So when we try to become enjoyers, the heart becomes hard. And when we try to become renouncers, the heart becomes hard. But only by bhakti does the heart become soft.
What kind of person is comes into this category of
Mayavadis? Huh? Well, anyone who's not a pure devotee. Anyone who's not a pure devotee will be influenced to some degree, either by false enjoyment or false renunciation, usually both. So it will be some defect in one's service.
In the West, there's lots of people that are real renounced on one side, but then they enjoy like anything on the other side. In other words, they're, for instance, they don't drink milk or something like that, but then they smoke pot. So is that in the category of alcoholism?
Yeah. It is called here, if you've read the verse in whole purport, quoted from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Markata Vairagya. Markata is monkey. Monkeys appear very renounced. They live naked in the forest. They have no clothes, no home, nothing. They live by eating fruits and berries. So they appear to be very renounced. But Srila Prabhupada says each monkey keeps 24 mates at least and enjoys. So we should avoid Markata Vairagya or Phalgu Vairagya. There should be genuine renunciation, which comes from purification. Here Lord Chaitanya is telling Raghunath Das that Markata Vairagya na kara loka dekana yata yogya vishaya bunja anasaktahana. Do not make yourself a show bottle devotee and become a false renunciate. For the time being, enjoy the material world in a befitting way and do not become attached to it. And Lord Chaitanya instructed him that externally you can appear like an ordinary householder, but internally you should have no attachment whatsoever. And you should always think of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya used Raghunath Das to set the example that out of sentiment or over-enthusiasm, one should not renounce. But one should remain in one's position and gradually become more attached to Krishna and more detached from Maya. We're on page 86 in the verse book. And then one's renunciation will be fixed. Not that one day somebody renounces and then the next day he laments and he misses the things or the persons that he left and he thinks about them. And then the next day after that he goes back to them. So Lord Chaitanya advised him that externally act like an ordinary householder, but internally don't have any attachment. Antare nishta kara baya loka vyavahar. Antare nishta kara means internally you should be fixed. And baya loka vyavahar, externally you act like an ordinary person to satisfy them. Achirat Krishna Tomaya Karibe Udar. And very soon Krishna will give his mercy to you. So we should not be over enthusiastic, but we should remain in our own position and gradually cultivate attachment to Krishna, and through attachment to Krishna become detached from Maya. And here also Rupa Goswami has stated that one doesn't have to cultivate renunciation separately, but taste for devotional service will automatically make one detached. And Bhagavad Gita also says the same thing. Param Dristva Nivartate. That by experiencing the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, one gives up the inferior attachments. So this is the actual process. It doesn't have to be cultivated. And in the same purport here, Srila Prabhupada quotes the earlier verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu under the heading, accepting only what is necessary. So one should accept whatever is necessary for devotional service and not more. He shouldn't artificially increase or artificially decrease. Then Rupa Goswami discusses things like developing good qualities, yam and niyam, which are principles of yoga for, they're like do's and don'ts. Refraining from things that one should refrain from and doing things that one should do. And Rupa Goswami says that these also are not qualifications or items of devotional service. One doesn't have to cultivate them separately. But if one becomes Krishna conscious, then automatically he will develop all good qualities. And Rupa Goswami quotes some verses from the story about Narada and the hunter who became a great devotee. And one verse is quoted here. O hunter, good qualities like non-violence, which you have developed, are not very astonishing. For those who are engaged in the Lord's devotional service are never inclined to give pain to others because of envy. It's on the next page, 87, in the verse book. So the conclusion is that karma, varnashram, jnana, vairagya, and good qualities, yam, niyam, socham, ahimsa, they don't have to be practiced separately. But if one engages in devotional service, one derives all of the benefits, all of the results. As Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion, one who becomes vegetarian or non-violent isn't necessarily a devotee, but one who becomes a devotee automatically becomes vegetarian and non-violent. So the real thing is Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness, all of the good qualities come. And without Krishna consciousness, one does not really have good qualities anyway. Because he's on the mental platform, and he can fall down at any time. So, any questions about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti?
One of the definitions, second part of the definition, that it awakens Bhava Bhakti. But let's say one is practicing Sadhana Bhakti, but he hasn't attained the stage of Bhava yet. So how does he know he's practicing Sadhana Bhakti? He doesn't know that he's going to get there.
If he is engaged in Uttama Bhakti without any other desire for Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, and if he is serving Krishna favorably under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and the scriptures, then he should perceive the fact that he's advancing. And if he's advancing from the first step to the second step, from the second step to the third step, then he can expect that by the same process and by the same mercy that he's getting that's helping him to advance to whatever extent he has advanced, he will be able to advance to the goal. But if one does not have the desire to serve Krishna purely, then even though he engages, of course, then also Krishna is merciful. He may make some arrangement to remove the desires of the devotee. That verse, that bhakti and mukti are like witches that haunt the conditioned soul. And as long as one is haunted by the desires for bhakti and mukti, he can't relish the sweet taste of devotional service. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I'm reading from Prabhupada's purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that if one maintains within his heart, see, we may have desires due to past conditioning, but we're trying not to maintain them. We're actually trying to lose them. But here he says that if one maintains within his heart the desire to enjoy the result of good work, that means karma. This is on page 30. Or being embarrassed by the material world, the desire to get out of material entanglement, one will never be able to attain the transcendental mellows of devotional service. In other words, one must not desire material profit when rendering devotional service. If one follows all the 64 regulative principles, he cannot attain pure devotional service with a contaminated heart. So we have to want to become free from other desires. And if we want to become free and follow the process, then we'll become free by the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. But if we want to maintain desires for material enjoyment or liberation, then even if superficially we engage in devotional activities, we will not be able to reach the goal unless the heart becomes purified. And your effort.
So when we're applying ourselves to the process of Vaini Bhakti, it's a set of rules, regulations and instructions and strictures and so forth. Raganuga Bhakti is when spontaneity takes over, but right?
Well, we don't know what Raganuga Bhakti is because we haven't come to that section.
But in Vaidhi Bhakti, there's so many, like you're saying, there's different steps, but that one continues. There's no point in Vaidhi Bhakti where one stops. It says one must follow, in the definition, it says one must follow all the rules and regulations. So in Vaidhi, there's no that one feels he can do or he can't do, or maybe I'll do, maybe I don't want to do.
I think that when we discuss Raganuga Bhakti, it will become more clear. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that in the beginning one has to get up for Mangalarti by force. He may not want to get up early, but by force he has to get up early. Force of the order of Guru. But later he may spontaneously like to get up early, worship the deity, think of ways of dressing the deity and decorating the deity. That is not Raganuga Bhakti. It is partially Vaidhi Bhakti, because deity worship conducted according to the rules and regulations. But there's some taste, some spontaneous desire to serve, which makes it a little more than, you know, just plain Vaidhi Bhakti without any taste or any spontaneous desire. But we can't say that that's Raganuga Bhakti. It comes in Vaidhi Bhakti, but there's something more than in the beginning, when one just struggles to wake up and get to Mangalarti in time. Many devotees have experienced in the beginning, they used to struggle to get up in time, take bath, and be in the temple for Mangalarti. Then they get some taste, so they want to get up early. Instead of 4 o'clock, they want to get up 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and chant before Mangalarti. Nobody's forcing them, but they want to get up earlier and chant. So there's something more than in the beginning. But still, it's in the general category of Vaidhi Bhakti. And what Raganuga Bhakti is something specific, which we will discuss soon.
I guess I'm just kind of looking for the is there some sort of division?
It's not a division point. You see, you're asking a question about a subject that has been discussed in many verses of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So I think we're about to discuss the same subject, and then hopefully you'll get a more clear idea of what Raganuga Bhakti is and what the relationship between Raganuga Bhakti and Vaidhi Bhakti is. No, that means that he's saying that one has to follow the rules and regulations of Varnashram until he has some attraction for the messages of Krishna. And there the word is, what, spontaneous liking or something. But that means Shraddha, that we discussed in the beginning about eligibility for devotional service. That hearing the talks of Krishna, if one awakens Shraddha and is not too attached to material enjoyment or too attached to artificial renunciation, he can take to bhakti. And the other verse says that if one doesn't have awakened Shraddha in Krishna consciousness, and if one is still too attached, then he has to continue to follow Varnashram Dharma because he's not eligible for pure devotional service. You understand? Varnashram Dharma is meant to purify people who have material attachments. Until they're detached enough and have enough faith in bhakti to take to bhakti.
so they can be on the platform. It's not like put themselves on the platform without about the vanish realm. Like, so he had the Tupacander and what's that from, and he said that all the conditions were for him.
No, no, that, not that he didn't want them to be above Varnashram.
Artificially.
No, it's not a question of artificially either. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was certainly above Varnashram. But he has accepted the sacred thread. He gave the sacred thread to devotees who were not born in Brahmin families for the sake of preaching, because he didn't want people to disrespect them by thinking that they're not Brahmins. So he accepted the logic that a Vaishnava is more than a Brahmin. The Brahminical qualifications are included within the Vaishnava. But just so that the people in general who don't really understand the position of a Vaishnava, they only appreciate the position of a Brahmin, he gave them the sacred thread so that people would see that here is a Brahmin. Like many caste-conscious Brahmins in India, they used to say that we can become Vaishnavas, but we can't become Brahmanas. And sometimes they would even say that you're more than a Brahmin. You're a Vaishnava, but still you're not a Brahmin in your next life. So that's why he did it, for the sake of preaching. He's asking the difference between Daivi Varnashram and Varnashram. Well, Daivi Varnashram means for the satisfaction of Krishna, according to the principles of Krishna. And certainly not by birth.
This may be too big of a subject to ask the question about it, since we're talking about it. When Prabhupada expressed the desire that Varnashram be established, was it somehow rather fitting within Uttama Bhakti that it be established, or was it along the lines of what we're discussing here? That
well, just like we build a guest house, we make a restaurant, is that within Uttama Bhakti?
I think so.
Yeah, because we're doing it for the sake of preaching. We want to provide a place where people can take rest. Now, providing a place for people to take rest in and of itself is not bhakti. But if the idea is to provide a place for people to take rest in the temple so they can come to the stage of bhakti, then it's bhakti. So similarly, Varnashram in itself is not bhakti, but it's like an arrangement for people to help them to come to bhakti. So for us, it's bhakti to build a guest house. But for them to sleep in the guest house is not bhakti. But in the morning, if they wake up and go to Mangal Arati, then they're making progress in the line of bhakti. Of what? Ruchi comes after nishta. Nishta comes after anartha nivritti. So there may be a wonderful kirtan, and the devotee will feel some pleasure in the kirtan, and he may like to sing and dance and go on for 1 or 2 or 3 hours. But then 2 days later we find that he ran off with some girl and they were seen heading to the Mathura train station. So he hasn't passed anartha nivritti, but still he has experience some pleasure. If we never experienced any pleasure, we wouldn't be in devotional service. There has to be some experience. One of the items is honoring prasad. I think most devotees have had the experience of honoring prasad and feeling some ecstasy. But it doesn't mean that they're free from anarthas. And the stage of ruchi is after the stage of anartha nivritti. So, Vaidhi Bhakti, in the sense of strictly obeying the rules and regulations without any experience of the taste of Krishna consciousness, you know, cannot exist absolutely. There has to be some taste. But it's a general definition. But unless someone has some experience of some pleasure in Krishna consciousness, he won't be able to continue.
It is said that that one can even fall from the platform of Bhava. So what kind of analysis makes one fall down from Bhava? Because one has also passed the stage of analysis.
We'll discuss it when we get to it. But the answer is offenses. Taste. Just like someone begins the process of devotional service, he has some taste for devotional service. But then again, ruchi can refer to a specific stage. So one will certainly have some taste for devotional service, but it doesn't mean that he's come to the stage of ruchi as a stage. There's a definition of the stage of ruchi, or an explanation of the stage of ruchi in Madhurya Kadambini. And when one is in the stage of ruchi, he gets more taste from kirtan than from anything else. If he's in kirtan and somebody passes by with some alluring material object, he's not interested. We may have some taste for kirtan, but if there's some other opportunity, we may leave the kirtan also. Or our mind may leave the kirtan. But when we're in the stage of ruchi, then the mind doesn't go here and there looking for pleasure. In Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, is that Rupa Goswami has listed 61 principal items of devotional service. Now, do we have to engage in all of them? No. Rupa Goswami has explained that if one has nishta, if one is firmly fixed and engages in one of the 9 main processes, or 2 or 3, or all 9, he can achieve the goal of bhava bhakti. So in one sense, when one comes to the stage of nishta, then he gets firmness in devotional practices. He's not deviated or disturbed by different elements, which are mentioned in Madhurya Kadambini, like sleep and other things that come. Then, when he's at the stage of nishta, and with nishta, he engages in any of the 9 or all of the 9, then he can reach the goal of bhava bhakti. And there are examples. Who's the example of the devotee who attained perfection by Shravana. Okay, why don't you raise your hands for the process and the devotee? I won't name the process. You have to think of the process and the devotee. Yes. Yes. Kirtanam Sukadeva Goswami. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. So if someone concentrates on one item, that is called ekanga. And if someone concentrates equally on several items, or all nine items, that is bahu anga, or anekanga. So one can achieve perfection either by ekanga or anekanga, provided he has nishta, that he's very fixed in his practice. All right. So how many have turned in the homework on chapters 13 and 14? That means devotional qualifications up to devotional qualifications. And how many have turned in the homework on 15 and 16? Huh? No, the homework. Huh? You have homework? What was the homework?
The difference between where was of that, and after that you ask about the difference between Radhambika and Raganmika.
Anyway, no harm. The assignment was to outline chapters 15 and 16. You did it? Because I told you, or out of spontaneous love? Because I said to do it. Most of the time it's like that.
So we were very spontaneous.
That's true. Once you got the order, you had spontaneous enthusiasm. Okay, so please, everyone, read chapters 15 and 16, because we're going to discuss tomorrow. And tomorrow will be the last day that the homework will be accepted, which is the outline for chapters 15 and 16.
Just an outline.
An outline means you should write down the main points. What is a main point, what is a sub-point, and what is the relationship between the points?
But he said something about the date.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.